Last year, New York became the first state to officially adopt a new symbol for disability access. With bent arms pushing a wheelchair forward, head angled at full speed ahead, the dynamic figure practically races off the sign and into the future. The endorsement of this symbol speaks to incredible progress. More than ever before, there are active roles for people with disabilities in our workplaces, roles that benefit them and their employers' bottom line. But currently, only about one-fifth of adults with disabilities are working. As organizations that recognize and celebrate the potential of every individual, federations can be at the forefront of helping change the statistics. So what can people with disabilities mean for your federation and community agencies? How can you best support these new employees? And what tools are available to help you make your workplace more accessible? My name is Marcia Cahotas from the Minneapolis Jewish Federation, and I am co-chair of JFNA's Disability Committee. And my co-chair, Matt, is here as well. It is my honor to introduce and moderate today's panel of advocates and experts who will present both the facts and personal stories of how everyone benefits when organizations commit to hiring workers of all abilities. Jennifer Sheehy, to my immediate left, who has led an illustrious career in public service, is the Acting Assistant Secretary of the Office of Disability Employment Policy at the Department of Labor, where she leads efforts to create and influence policies and practices that increase the number and quality of employment opportunities for people with disabilities. Dana Marlowe, further on, is the award-winning principal partner of Accessibility Partners, LLC, where she develops and advances accessible technologies that create opportunities for people with disabilities. Dana is also an active volunteer and lay leader in the Washington Jewish community. I just want to let you know that we are on the record, so to speak. This session is being recorded by Voices of America. And one final reminder, today is your last day and chance to play the GA. So remember to check into this session on your app, on your phone, and take the survey afterward. We'll announce the winner of the trip to Israel at the closing plenary this afternoon. You've got to be there to win, so remember that. Good luck to you. And if we're all ready to go, you ready? Thank you, Secretary.
So I'll go ahead and start. Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us at our new time. You guys have a very, very, very exciting day ahead of you, and we are very happy to accommodate. Thank you so much, Marcia and to Matt, who I just met, the co-chairs, and to Liz, who helped arrange this. And Dana and I go way back, where she helps us with our accessible technology grant, and we would love for you guys to learn more about that in your own time after the session. You just go to dol.gov/ODEP, and we have lots of resources. I won't have time to talk about all of them today. I really want to just kind of give you an introduction to what we do, but certainly welcome you to follow up with me afterwards or with others on our staff, look at the website, see what might be useful to you, ask questions, we'll tell you what might be useful to you. We're very, very excited to engage with this new friendship and partnership and just thrilled to be here today. So thank you so much. And it sounds like you guys are doing amazing things. I see the slogan, Think Forward, this year, and it's thinking forward to us means thinking inclusively because, of course, diversity means bringing lots of different people together with ideas, perspectives, backgrounds, information to create the best solutions for the hardest problems. And people with disabilities need to be at the table because we certainly bring diverse perspectives and unique skills just from managing our own disabilities. I mean, I remember to tell you just a very quick story, my own story. So I was in business school 20 years ago when I had my spinal cord injury. I was working for Anheuser-Busch in an internship in the middle of my two-year MBA program at Georgetown. And I was really loving life. And I was doing great in school. I was president of the Marketing Association. I got this amazing internship with the biggest powerhouse marketer in the country. And honestly, things were very different back then. I thought doing my duty and being a patriot meant selling as much American beer as possible. And I was ready to go, and ready to do it. And then I was at a pool party. I got pushed in backwards. I broke my neck. The next 3 months was just a flurry of surgery and, you know, getting family members close by and friends to kind of circle the wagons. And at the end of 3 months, I was ready to go home and start, you know, inpatient therapy. And I was like, oh my gosh, what now? What do I do? Am I ever going to be able to play golf again or walk again or do so many things? And then it just like hit me like a brick. Am I ever going to be able to work again in order to afford to do some of these things? And I just didn't see how that was going to happen. I had a great experience at that point, two people that were extremely influential in my own life choices, and one of them was an executive vice president at Anheuser-Busch who said, you were doing a great job in your internship, just want you to know whenever you're ready to come back, we will hire you full time. I had that expectation of a job, so honestly, it was like opening the world in a window up to me. The other person was my vocational rehabilitation counselor, because gosh, I didn't know how I was going to do anything. I didn't know how I was going to use a computer without good hand function, how I was going to get around now that I couldn't walk, how I was going to do anything, how I was going to go back to business school. And she and I have been stayed in touch for 20 years. She was the one that helped me again raise my expectations and show me the way to doing some of these things. But when I went back to business school, and I was still successful, still at the head of my class, and doing well, I thought I was going to be able to like take any job I wanted. I thought employers would look at me and say, oh, she's doing great, but she's also managed a challenge and shown that she can still do all these things. And so, man, I thought I was going to have more of a competitive advantage. And that's what you care about when you're in business school. You love your colleagues, but you want to compete to get that great job out of business school. So when I got a lot of first interviews, but people were asking me questions that showed clearly that I wasn't going to be considered. I mean, things like, I thought we were having a good interview. I thought I was answering questions. And at the end, someone said, well, is there any hope for you? And I was thinking, well, not getting this job, apparently. But you never ask that question. You never ask if someone's pregnant, and you never ask if there's any hope for them, because it's just not done. And so then I thought, okay, maybe there is another way to tackle this. There's obviously a lot of discrimination, just misperceptions and stereotypes that need to be changed. And I wanted to put my efforts into that for a while. A while turned out to be 20 years. And I'm happy to say that, you know, what I thought was doing my service to the country and being patriotic then, and I now feel that I'm doing something very patriotic and serving the country by helping employers find the best candidates and really meet their talent needs by not overlooking people with disabilities. So it's great. I love doing it, but we have a lot of work to do. We have to do it with partners and, you know, like Dana, like all of you, because A, we are a very small disability policy office, so we don't take one step without partners. And B, there is a lot of work to do, and it's complicated. And you guys know that better than anybody. And so whatever we can do to leverage our resources, bless you, and and skills and talents and experiences. We want to help you do that. I also noticed that you, the federations have a pilot program through which young Jewish people with disabilities had paid internships at major federations around the country. That's great. There is a comedian, Mitch Hedberg, who said, "I'm sick of following my dreams. I just want them to tell me where they're going and I'll hook up with them later." When you think about being a young person, particularly a young person with a disability, it is hard, and you don't know where you're going and you don't know how you're going to get there. So whatever we can do to help young people transition into that, the career of their choice and maybe of their dreams, it is great. So thank you very much for giving them a chance. We do have a youth team, youth policy team, and wonderful resources that we have available to help out, and we're happy to share those too. It's wonderful that another reason I think it's great that we're here today so early and on a rainy day is that we don't typically interact with religious organizations. And if you, and many of you have seen this or know about this, looking back over the centuries, religious organizations haven't always been the first ones at the table on disability. And unfortunately, there were some very well-meaning people who thought a disability meant even that there might have been a curse on the family or on the individual. So we've come a long way. I still now run into people who ask if they can pray for me or you know, ask if they can bless me. And A, I always say, thank you, yes, because you don't want to turn that down. But then use it as a teaching moment, too, to say, you know, often that sentiment comes from a place where they think you need to be fixed. There is something wrong with you. And you just want to make sure people realize that is, there's nothing wrong with you, that you have differences and challenges that you have to meet, but other people have differences and challenges that they have to manage too in their daily lives. And we all want to bring our contributions, our talents forward. And the country cannot survive unless everybody who has those talents can contribute those. So again, to have the federations behind this and so actively involved is really, really critical and very meaningful to our offices. So thank you again. I'm going to show you a public service advertisement now that ODEP has created in partnership with organizations like the U.S. Business Leadership Network, the Special Olympics, the American Association of People with Disabilities, and we've had three in a row. They're all downloadable from our website. You can use them in trainings. You can use them with employers. You can put your own logos on them. We don't feel any ownership. We want people to use these. But I'm going to show it now because I think it illustrates a lot of what we're talking about here today. And Liz Leibovitz is going to turn into Vanna White and be our wonderful technology advisor.
I'll make it work.
All right. Great.
Wonderful.
Come on in.
All right.
Great.
While she's doing this, I'll tell you that this PSA, the series of PSAs that we've had, have been rated in the top 1% of Nielsen ratings, and this particular one has been aired over 57,000 times around the country since January. So we're very, very happy that television stations are picking this up.
Doesn't like right behind Seinfeld numbers.
Ah! The Who I Am public service announcement is a diverse montage of working people with disabilities, stating some of the different aspects of their full identities and how they might describe themselves. These elements include physical characteristics, personal interests, and family relationships, as well as occupations and disabilities. All participants appear in a television studio setting. Following the concluding narration, a graphic slate appears showing the What Can You Do logo, the website address, whatcanyoudocampaign.org, and the U.S. Department of Labor seal.
I'm 5'11".
Barely 5'4".
I weigh about 170 pounds.
Brown eyes.
Blue eyes.
Brown hair.
Gray hair.
I'm a baseball fanatic.
I'm a wife.
A mom.
A sister.
And a grandfather.
I'm a bodybuilder.
I'm a research analyst.
Small business owner.
Teacher.
Dance fitness instructor.
Film and television actor.
I'm an office clerk.
I'm a copywriter.
I'm a veteran.
I have a prosthetic leg.
I have multiple sclerosis.
I have lupus.
Cerebral palsy.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
I'm blind.
And I'm working in a job I love.
I love.
Because I was given a chance.
Because I was given a chance.
To contribute my skills and talents.
To show my disability is only one part of who I am.
Who I am.
Who I am.
At work, it's what people can do that matters.
For more information, visit whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
So I love this because I think it really shows that people have lots of parts to their identities. Certainly, disability is one of them. I'm proud of what it's brought to my life, but it's not everything. And we need to look beyond the one identity that people might see or perceive. You know, certainly, people with non-apparent disabilities are much more prevalent in the disability community, which is about 19% of the population. So if you can't bring your full identity to work, then you can't contribute the way you need to for yourself and for your employer. Another quote that I like is Bryant McGill, who said that all discomfort comes from suppressing your true identity. If you don't feel that you can disclose a disability that you have or a difference that you have, maybe, you know, you're gay or transgender, or you have depression, or you have a background that you aren't proud of, you're an ex-offender. If you can't be open about bringing those aspects of yourself to work, then you're leaving a lot of your own energy on the table, and the employer isn't benefiting from your full talents, and you're not contributing your full talents, and certainly not engaged in the workplace as well. So some of the resources that we have go to tackling those low expectations, but helping people also understand that they have some responsibility sometimes to be open about their disabilities. Being a leader sometimes means opening yourself up to being vulnerable, to give others the courage to face and find the accommodations for the differences that they have, so that they can get the help and the services, the accommodations they need to be productive or to follow their dreams. I've been talking to kids in school recently too, and I'm really encouraged because I feel like the kids are being more open now about all of their differences, maybe too open, frankly. And there have to be some limits, especially on the internet. But I love that some of the high schools I go to now, people come up to me afterwards and talk about their anxiety or their depression or, you know, another type of difference or something in their background that maybe 20 years ago people were very ashamed of. And they're included in classrooms now. They're mainstreamed. And it's great. It will change slowly our culture and our complexity and profile in America. But it can't happen. It's not happening fast enough. So we all can do more to encourage that shift. one of the, we do base all of our work on research, on data, because frankly, you can't spend money now without knowing what the outcomes are and being able to measure your impact. So even a policy office now has to measure its impact. So we do know that our research tells us through, we do research with employers. We contracted Wharton Business School to do research with us. And we know that a lot of employers are still coming to the table only because they have that personal connection. We've talked to employers, big employers, like that are doing good things, like Ernst & Young, Marriott, Walgreens, CVS, Booz Allen Hamilton. They will say, no, I don't come to the table because it's a charitable thing to do. I come because I want to hire the best people, and I don't frankly care whether they have a disability or not. But if you talk to them and you look back to why they got there in the first place, many, many of them had family connections or a personal relationship with disability that drove the top-level leadership and the change within their organization. So we know, we don't criticize employers that come to the table for what some might say are the wrong reasons. We work with them where they are and then bring them up the diversity scale to say, hey, you know, you've learned that diversity is what you need to include in your business so that your employees look like your customers or that you're getting the best solutions for the tough questions and problems. But disability has to be part of that diversity fabric as well, because you have customers with disabilities. You have employees with lots of non-apparent disabilities, and if they don't feel comfortable and included in your organization, then they are not going to be reaching out for the help they need when they get it, and that is when there is there you have problems, maybe with an exacerbated chronic condition or a disability, or when they're aging into a disability, when we're aging into disabilities. Then they won't reach out for the help they need, the accommodation, and they will either leave the company or become a performance problem at that time. So we always try to show companies how they can incorporate inclusive practices that starts with top-level leadership. And this goes towards federation hiring, too. Top-level leadership, internships for young people with disabilities. Making sure there's an affinity group on disability, making sure that all the affinity groups discuss disability and every other, you know, major work-life issue that comes up, so that it's not just segregated into a disability-only function, making sure that the advertising and the communications in the business include disability. These we have several tools for employers on the website. We show you know, when employers come to the table, we have numbers to back up the talent that hiring people with disabilities and keeping them at the workplace is not going to affect the bottom line prices for, you know, insurance costs or accommodation costs. Most accommodations, more than 58% of accommodations, cost nothing. And the ones that do cost typically cost less than $500. So it's not an expensive pursuit. We have we fund the Job Accommodation Network that's logged in more than 300,000 calls with individuals and employers who will talk with you confidentially about how to problem solve around an accommodation need and give you suggestions of what can be provided at the workplace. These are just some of the things that we offer. And I want to mention that the benefits that people with disabilities bring to the table aren't just quantifiable and in the U.S. You know, companies like Walgreens have studied the benefit, the cost of the bottom line, the retention, the better retention, typically, of people with disabilities. Frankly, because they, some of us aren't given a chance, and we feel pretty good about an employer that makes those accommodations and has those inclusive practices. And we are typically tend to stay on jobs longer. Certainly, different people with different types of disabilities have features that can be real assets in a particular good match work. So if an employer needs the data to say, you know, I'm not sure I believe all this hype, or a PSA that just tells me to hire someone with a disability, we actually do have data that backs up, and that's universal across the world. There are studies all over that tell us that people with disabilities are not going to be a detraction at your workplace. Employers will tell us that, well, I don't want to be around someone. I mean, seriously, this is what our research tells us. Employers were worried that employees didn't want to be around someone who was suffering, who seemed to be suffering. And we say you just need to experience working with one person with a disability who is in the right job to know that that experience can lift the morale of other employees. I mean, frankly, the example that we have, and 40% of our own employees in the Office of Disability Employment Policy have disabilities. I mean, we hear from people all over Department of Labor, wow, I cannot come in and complain about my commute on Metro when I know this person had to get up an extra 2 hours earlier and figure out a way to get in, figure out how to commute to work without the services of a Metro when the elevator is down, or figure out how to do things with limited hand function, or figure out how to do things when the person is deaf or blind, and they still do it, and they do it successfully. It's a great example, and I think it's even better when a company that provides services for people with disabilities can show that they have hired people with disabilities themselves, and often that's a great pathway too. You work with people, you find excellent people that can contribute, that they might not even know themselves what they can expect from themselves. And when you've worked with that person, like my counselor worked with me, and then that person becomes successful and can give back, it is a very rewarding experience. So I have I've talked a lot about our resources and the website. Again, I would love to follow up with you. I want to make sure that you realize how much we really appreciate your interest in this and your work and your efforts. We feel that the role of leaders is not to create more followers, but to create more leaders, and that we really do have a wonderful opportunity to work together. So I will look forward to a continued relationship and really appreciate the experience today. Thank you so much.
It's always wonderful to be in the same room as Jennifer, because I constantly, year after year, I learn more nuggets and more beneficial information. So thank you, Jennifer, and also I want to say thank you to Marcia, being our moderator and co-chair with Matt of the Disability Inclusion Committee at JFNA, and for Liz Leibowitz for working with the whole team to organize and bring such terrific topics to the General Assembly this year that included a half day on Sunday on this topic and yesterday's session as well. So it's great to see that exposure on disabilities and inclusion and accessibility being brought to the forefront for the federations and other Jewish organizations. As Marcia had mentioned, I do really enjoy working with the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington here where I live, on their Disability Inclusion Committee and a host of other areas. But it's so exciting to see here locally for me, as well as other federations that are taking this on as a really important initiative. And so thanks again for you, Jennifer, to share what the Department of Labor's Office of Disability Employment Policy is doing. I'm here to kind of make it a little bit more personal and share with you what my company, Accessibility Partners, which is an IT consulting firm that focuses on working with our partners, because partners are crucial, and our clients, both in the public and private space, to make their technology accessible for people with disabilities. And so we realize that technology it's not just important, it's part of, at this point of our lives, our lifeblood. So you registered for the conference online, you are tweeting the GA Play the Game app that I probably messed up, but it's on your phones. And so there's just such a huge amount of technology going on, and so it's a great accommodation as well. And so one thing that impresses me is the versatility of workforces and the diversity that's out there, including people with disabilities. And just out of curiosity, again, I know it's early in the morning and everyone's probably now standing in line at security to get in, just a quick show of hands, how many of you at your respective organizations, agencies, federations recognize that there are team members with disabilities? Okay, so that's about 9 hands out of the room of roughly 23, 24 or so. And I think that's amazing, and that's great. But I want to now just kind of look under the hood at what we do at Accessibility Partners and tell you why 85% of my company's workforce are people with disabilities. And I don't think of it that way. These are my employees. These are our team members. They're the cohort of folks that work with our clients to make technology accessible. We sport a mobile workforce. So while I'm here in the DC area, as some other team members, we have folks in Nebraska, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Ohio, all over in all the different time zones. And of course, when we do get together in one location, it's always a lot of fun and a frenzy of frequent flyer miles. So we have a workforce that's a majority of people with disabilities. But that's not something I typically lead with. I'm certainly happy to come and talk about that. But that's just the normal course of our doing business. Because to us, that's the recipe for a lot of our success, is just this incredible diverse workforce. So as some of you may know, last month was the 70th celebration of the National Disability Employment Awareness Month, or NDEAM, and we saw that great PSA from ODEP. And while the proclamation wording may have changed over the years, I think the message of awareness and advocacy behind it has not. So certainly that message that we saw, that my disability is one part of who I am, while disability is and may be an important part, it's by no means the whole. And our first tip that we talk about is, we talk a lot about language and people first, but truly using that, stepping out and saying, yes, language, people, like people first, language is important, and there are some groups who view it differently, but looking at the person as a whole first is really essential. And we also emphasize the positives at Accessibility Partners. So when we look at what are the monetary benefits of hiring people with disabilities, we're really looking at some of the issues that Jennifer brought up, as far as their long-term employees, and a lot of people, are very loyal and they stay with the company for a long time. And so these are really key benefits. But I've run into a lot of people who say, oh, that's such a nice thing you do, and nothing gets under my skin more. Because I want it said right here, I'm not doing this because this is a nice thing to do. I'm not doing this. This is not a pity party. I run an IT consulting firm, and that's not why I do what I do. It is not charity. It's a right thing to do for a lot of reasons. But if you want to get under my skin, that's how. The biggest barrier to hiring people with disabilities, which is what, for those who are familiar with this landscape, is the prevalent negative, the attitudinal barriers that other people have. And that is one that organizations like ODEP and the Job Accommodations Network and EARN, and there's, I'm sure, at the JFNA's Disability Inclusion Committee and locally here on the ground in Washington, it really focuses on trying to break down those attitudinal barriers. And an example is my older son goes to a day camp, a summer camp here in the DC area, that is a huge inclusion program. And the JCC is wonderful, and it's fantastic. And my son is in bunks and camp with dozens and dozens of kids with disabilities, and he doesn't realize that, and that's key. That's powerful when he has no idea, because that's how it should be. He's calling them by his friends' names, and it's not just because, oh, he does know that mom has a lot of friends who are blind, or mom has a lot of friends who come to the house and are in wheelchairs. He doesn't see it that way. And so that's how I know there is a change, because an attitudinal shift doesn't happen overnight. And it takes folks like, you know, Jennifer coming out of a very busy schedule, you know, at Department of Labor and coming to talk to organizations where people are starting to realize that this is really a key issue. So changing the attitudinal behaviors of hiring managers is really essential, and helping to smash the stigma that's out there. And one of the things that, you know, you hear is that the biggest disability in life is a bad attitude. And nothing can limit a person's professional success more than by having a negative outlook. So clearly, it's not about who you're hiring with or without a disability. It's about who are the most skilled, most talented, most highly qualified candidates, and they happen to have a disability, or as they said in the video, or brown hair, or they're short, or they're tall. Who cares? Are they getting the job done well? Are they a high performer? Are they meeting their goals and objectives? And so that's one of the key focuses that we have at work. And part of our business model, or our playbook, looks at the best defense against disability exclusion is a strong offense. And I'm not a football person, although in my house you would think that everybody lives and dies by the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, but not me, because I'm not usually sure when they're on. But really frequently scoring plays for us focus on providing accommodations to employees, any kind of accommodations. Our strategy really is to look at combining the best approach for accessible technology and assistive technology. And in case you're not sure of what those two differences are, accessible technology is something that a person with a disability can use just as well as similarly situated as a person without a disability. So it's technology that doesn't need any special add-ons, any unique additional assistive technology. Somebody can just use their product, their technology, their software, their hardware out of the box, and it works for everyone. Assistive technology is an additional add-on so that somebody with a disability then can utilize whatever said piece of technology. So a key example is for a person or an employee who is blind, they might utilize a piece of assistive technology called a screen reader, which then reads everything out loud that is graphically displayed visually on the screen to them, whether it's on a mobile platform on your phone or on the computer screen. And so we support our staff with accessible options. And we have tons of different people with disabilities on our staff. I have our CFO is blind. Our technical services manager is a gentleman who's blind and deaf. We have accessibility engineers with mobility disabilities. We have hearing disabilities. We have other hidden disabilities and mental disabilities. It crosses a gamut, but we also don't care. So while, again, I'm happy to share with you all of this, that's just a part of our workforce. You wouldn't have, like, this wouldn't be a session if I was telling you about that we have, you know, 32% of our staff are brunettes. And, you know, we have four blue-eyed. No, I mean, like, it's just part of who Accessibility Partners is and does. And so we provide assistive technology, but we also do our very best to work with partners and vendors who are already creating out-of-the-box accessible technology. That means that if we need a financial software application, we really have to do our research and legwork to see which ones are already accessible. Now, part of what we do is work with companies to make their technology accessible, which makes it a little more tricky because then it's not accessible. I have no problem saying, I'm sorry, we can't procure your products. If you'd like to work with us, that doesn't mean we're going to still procure it, but we're happy to provide you with the feedback, the consultation, and the recommendations on how you can remediate your products, your website, so that somebody who's blind can go navigate your Federation's website or your, you know, fancy schmancy app that you just created to engage more, insert whatever the population in your target market is, just to make sure that whoever that target market is, you want to get more interfaith families. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Disabilities crosses all segments. So you have a fancy schmancy app to engage more interfaith families and youth, but almost 20% of those interfaith families are most likely people with disabilities in your market. So making sure to not forget that just because you're looking at a specific group within your engagement and your profile in your communities, 20% of your said specific group are people with disabilities. And to not forget that disability is the largest majority of the largest minority here in the United States, and it's something that anybody, it could happen to anyone at any time as well if it already hasn't. 58% of accommodations have no cost. Okay, so the title of this session is Beyond Tikkun Olam, and Tikkun Olam doesn't have an unlimited budget, so what better way to repair the world than for free? So 58% of these accommodations cost nothing. A little creativity, a little bit of time, and then some communication. Asking your employee, asking your intern, asking your lay leaders what works best for them. And finding out. And so it's negligible. because Tikkun Olam also talks about performing services to repair the world, and I'm not a rabbi. This isn't my area of expertise. I leave that in your capable hands. But a workplace accommodation certainly is an easy service that you can provide to your employees, your team members, your cohorts, and your community. And those little efforts may seem small to some. They may seem huge to others. But that definitely helps providing a more cohesive unit and repairing the world, repairing your community. One of the ways, wearing my small business hat, again, because there's definitely a lot of large businesses, and Jennifer mentioned the United States Business Leadership Network, which has a host of amazing large Fortune 500 corporations, but there's also small businesses, like what I do, and other small businesses that are out there in other industries. One of the things that has worked well for Accessibility Partners is our bring your own device. And how that ties back into accommodating employees with disabilities is some offices pass the technology costs off to their employees who bring their own products with them. Some just say, you get whatever you get, here's your budget, here's your allowance. But that technology can also cross over to assistive technology because what works best for one doesn't work well for others. Somebody who really likes the Apple, one person really wants an Apple, you know, an iPhone. Somebody else really wants an Android for accessibility. Not that many people, but it certainly is possible. Hey. There's a ton of technology out there, and accommodating what works best for individuals is part of the fabric of what we do. And so the benefits for bring your own device have been tremendous for us. We will support our employees with any reasonable request, not a reasonable accommodation, any reasonable technical request. And we've not had one that's unreasonable to date. My company's been around for, we're coming up on 7 years. I've been in the field for almost in accessibility and inclusion just for almost 20. I've never once seen an unreasonable request. So there's all different kinds of technology that we provide, from all of the traditional concepts that you think of that makes an office run, your laptop computers, desktops, servers, because of the nature of what we do, smartphones. But then again, on the assistive technology side, it's the screen readers, the refreshable braille displays, the screen magnification software, the speech recognition software, alternative input devices, and so on. There are tons of different websites that provide that. I would certainly also point you back to the dol.gov/ODEP for ODEP. And on that site, you can get linked to a host of other organizations that have helpful tips, suggestions, that discuss what's the ROI, right? Because again, it comes back to dollars and cents in the bottom line. And there's some very helpful information on the Job Accommodation Network, on EARN, on P, on these links you can find, that have tangible data and hard facts that you can then bring back to your respective organizations and say, look, this isn't going to cost so much, or look what this does. So we have a lot of different BYOD, bring your own device, success stories. And I haven't visited because my team is all over the country and everybody's has a unique office setup. I don't see a lot of my employees and team member setups. But I did recently ask, we did a webinar for Pete on bring your own device. And I pulled a couple of our team members to send me photos, clean up the office, and send me some pictures of what does your office setup look like. And it was fascinating to see how my colleagues work and what their spaces look like. One of my colleagues, Brian, has 4 monitors of different sizes, a computer he built by himself. He's got a computer engineering background, and a whole bunch of laptops. I mean, it looked like it was like a mini Best Buy in his office. But he's like, I was overwhelmed by the amount of technology. But for him, and he's one of our senior accessibility engineers, it's perfect. He has everything that he needs at his disposal. It works great for him. And so BYOD works. Another area is our flexible work scheduling and our telework. Again, we're remote, and I realize that doesn't work for every model. So every federation and Jewish organization here might not be able to say, okay, everybody, starting next Monday, everybody can work from home. But for us, that works. And giving people the flexibility of telework certainly has let us tap into a larger market of highly talented and skilled and qualified job candidates who may have a disability and not be near mass transit and public transportation in your major cities. And so yeah, we have found that Lincoln, Nebraska is a hotbed for this. So we have several team members in Lincoln. And they have an amazing computer engineering, computer software program, management information systems, and they're cranking out tons and tons of great folks. And the folks want to stay near their families in Lincoln, but they are not near huge amounts of employers. And so that has been one of our little uncovered secrets that we use. The other thing is flexible scheduling. A lot of workplaces do require strict hours. We don't. So while I need to know that jobs are getting done and work output and products are high and our clients are happy, a lot of our team, I don't care if you're working at 3 a.m. if that's your best hour, or for different medical needs, they may have a lot of doctor's appointments during the regular workday because that's when doctor's offices are open. As long as work is getting done, it doesn't matter to me when it's happening. As long as folks are showing up for in-person meetings or conference calls, webinars, that kind of stuff, anything else is just get your work done and get it done right and successfully. And I understand mistakes happen, but I don't need to see you day in and day out in the office. And so we bust through that 9-to-5 grind and really let employees set their own hours. And so that flexible scheduling has been tremendous for us in hiring more people with disabilities. I want to talk about what happens when something goes wrong. And this is really, really key, because my guess is a large majority of you have probably heard a lot of what I've shared. But what happens when something goes wrong? Because I don't have a background in vocational rehab. I don't have a background in human resources. I have a business background and a disability accessibility background. And that didn't prepare me. This is all like good and well, and this is a great idea, and it's working, and everybody's, all the, you know, ducks are swimming in a row. But what happens when a duck decides to swim off in a different direction? How do you handle that? And so this is a true story, because as we know, disabilities aren't always visible. So yes, it's all good and well. We can talk about roughly 20% of the US population, but there's a lot more people who don't self-identify and who don't disclose, and that's totally fine. We don't ever ask. And again, I have no HR background, but because disabilities, it's irrelevant to us if you have a disability or not, that goes for hidden disabilities. And so keeping communication open has been really key. And so there's no sticker that somebody wears that says, you know, hello, I'm applying for a job and I have, you know, insert whatever specific mental disability, you know, that you want to identify as. And I'm a small business. I don't have some massively huge operational budget. And my accounting department certainly can't rival someone like IBM's, you know, where they have some huge team. But with mental disabilities, last-minute absences occur. And granted, this happens for all employees, disabilities aside, and things come up in people's lives. But certainly, sometimes for people with different kinds of mental disabilities, more absences than you might anticipate when you're hiring someone might come up. And so certainly people are absent. But I did have the experience of what happens if a person, a valued member of your team, needs to go to a long-term mental health facility. I don't have some huge, massive, robust plan in place for this. I mean, I have obviously standard operation and procedures, but this was a unique situation. And doctor's appointments, therapy appointments occur during the day. And again, that's where having a flexible schedule comes out. But mental health is unpredictable, and people can certainly experience a whole host of range of different kinds of emotions and changing behaviors that may or may not impact their colleagues. And so with this one example, our employee was on a very extended absence while at a mental health facility. And many people ask me, are you bringing this person back on after? Like, I was under no obligation according to all of, you know, my attorney and you know, like, and I couldn't understand why they were asking me. Of course I was. This was one of the most valued members of our team. There was nothing negotiable about this. I couldn't understand why people were asking me. I had to figure out, yes, did it cost us money? Yes. Did we have to quickly hire some other 1099s to fill in because everybody else was already at capacity? Sure. Did we do it? Yes. Is it a drop in the bucket for long-term success? Totally. I did look around for help. I did turn to different national organizations, state organizations, and what I started to realize is this was a unique situation, and I was shocked that it was unique. I figured that other people must be experiencing this too. Certainly, I could get feedback and counsel from state and national associations that deal with mentally ill topics and employment. The answer was no. And they could tell me why it's good to hire people in that category, which is great because I could talk about that too. But I wasn't able to get the consultation that I needed. And ultimately, it came down to me and the employee working it out with a team of medical professionals. And I don't know if what I did was right or wrong. Again, that was not in my playbook. I know the right things, but I had no one else to go to. And so we worked it out together, and it's as a team. And that has worked out and benefited us immensely. So things do go wrong, and you have to figure out that what is the best policy, and just like anything else, open communication, which can be applied to so many different things and challenges in life and in the workplace, has totally worked. So the honest dialogue has really been really key. As I'm sure you guys all know, then Tikkun Olam is always a work in progress. And it's the concept of repairing the world, which, yeah, I mean, again, I do what I do because I love what I do. But sometimes it feels, you know, like when you talk about repairing the world, you know, is it a never-ending construction project? But when you drill down on one topic, one area, one company, one organization, you're really able to make a bigger impact on a lot more people. And one of the Jewish sayings that I really like is, you're not required to finish your work, yet neither are you permitted to desist from it. And so I can't single-handedly hire every person with a disability, and neither can all of you. But collectively, if you guys all go back and think about who's in your workforce, who's in your team, who are your lay leaders, who are your volunteers, and then at dinner tonight, you know, after you go hear the Prime Minister speak, and you know, then you have your schmoozing around and you talk about, ask other people who are here, hey, can you think of a bunch of people with disabilities on your team? And really think about it. And I understand that there's hidden disabilities. But hear what people have to say. And start talking, continuing this conversation as Liz and I have, and I'm sure Marcia and Matt do, and Jennifer and I have. Because it's really the best time to continue to hire people with disabilities, talk about breaking down attitudinal barriers. And I encourage you to continue the conversation. My email address is on my business card up here. It's also dmarlowe, dmarlowe. There's an E at the end. And my grandfather thought it looked fancier that way. dmarlowe@accessibilitypartners.com. And I encourage you to stop by also with any questions. So thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. I do want to take an opportunity to acknowledge Liz, who's sneaking over there, Lebowitz, for organizing this and connecting with you, and thank you again for coming.
Oh, thank you.
We are ready for questions, and there's a microphone there, so I invite you to come to the microphone, or if you're unable to, I can come to you. And while we have these wonderful people here, ask questions. Anyone have questions?
I'd also like to thank them. While people are ruminating and thinking, I'd like to just thank the sign language interpreters for coming in and helping us.
Thank you.
I think if you could just take the mic, that way if anybody has any FM loops on, it'll
first of all, thank you. Great presentations, great video, all of it was very helpful. Just a question, it seems, so you have people with disabilities and employment opportunities, and bringing them together is great for everybody. Question is, how do we make that happen? What is the role of agencies? What is the role of federations? What is the role of our system in really facilitating that connection and making that happen? You gave some great ideas. Just sort of, if there's something we could start with, there seems to be a lot of challenges, everything from stigma, attitudes, towards accessibility, physical. What can we do? What's the best way for us to get started on that? Would be great.
Sure, and I'll follow up.
I just wanted to say that Dr. Bedney, who just asked this question, is from, she's part of the team with Liz from Domestic Policy and Government Affairs, so
great.
With JFNA.
Great, thank you for the question. I think some of it may depend on the size of the federation, right? So if you're a small federation and you have 2 full-time employees and 3 part-time employees, there might not be, let's say, you might not be hiring for a while, right? But for that example, what about the lay leaders? And what about your, it's not just, I mean, yes, this we could talk about hiring, but we could also transition to, for that small federation, what kind of outreach are they doing to their local community? Are they hosting events? Are they saying, is their website accessible? Is there something on their website that says, we are an inclusive federation? If you have a, you know, when they put out an event, they're doing some kind of a big event, a small event. Is there something that says, if you need an accommodation, please contact, you know, so-and-so, so that you can then be also bringing in and engaging the community, and then more people are learning about the federation. Maybe there is then also a role in when you are looking to hire that people just start thinking. I mean, clearly, again, I'm not an HR expert, so I know that there's a lot of legal, you know, Department of Justice and ADA, and, you know, rules that's not my sandbox, but talking to people to switch their mindsets for the large organizations that do a lot more hiring, that certainly have hiring managers, HR professionals on staff, really talking to them about it. And then obviously the same answer would go about for your lay leaders, again, because there's so many of your organizations, this isn't just hiring internally, but who you're bringing into the fold, who you're bringing under your umbrella, your tent, whether you're a small organization or you're a massive one, who you're bringing in. Are you bringing in people, volunteers and community members that have disabilities? Are you structured to approach and really engage with everyone who's Jewish, not Jewish, interfaith, all religions, et cetera? And so kind of thinking of it in that way.
Yeah, I mean, those are all excellent ideas. I mean, just having sign language interpreters at your event is a very, very visible sign of inclusion. And make sure that if you haven't thought ahead and people, or you have a situation or a public event where you can't always know all the accommodations, then you'll be covered, but it is also a symbol. It's seen as a symbol. One of the things that I hear from employers, because part of our job at ODEP is to do technical assistance with employers, research on employers, technical assistance, really, and we do it with input from employers. And what they tell us, too, is that they run into a situation often where a service provider, it doesn't really know how to interact with employers, doesn't know the business needs, doesn't know what the priorities are. And so learning a lot about the employers that are out there, the jobs that are available, making sure that match is good. Because the scary thing is if an employer has a bad match with the one person with a disability that they are like giving a chance to, and that doesn't work out, they're like, oh, all people with disabilities can't do the job. If you hire a redheaded person who doesn't do the job, you're gonna hire another redheaded person. But that's not often the case with disability. Reaching out to the organizations, being inclusive, making sure you know the independent living centers in your area. Independent living centers, there are more than 400 of them around the country. They are run by and for people with disabilities, and they help a community with accessibility issues, with employment issues, with helping people transition from facility-based residential services to the community. So they're great, great networking partners. The Vocation Rehabilitation System, the American Job Centers, they all serve people with disabilities. So those are definitely some of the ways you can reach out. And yes, be visibly inclusive. Use it in your promotion materials. Just, you know, little symbols that show that disability is part of what you care about, too. Those are all significant, particularly for small federations. Yes.
Well, but and the small federations are also probably putting out annual reports. When they are collecting those photos to use, I'm sure they're trying to amass photos of a smattering of who their community is? Are they including people with disabilities in those photos? So, because again, it has nothing to do with, are they including, you know, kids with disability, are they including kids at the swimming pool and some highlighting some summer camp, but are they including kids with a disability at the swimming pool? And so the marketing, the language, makes your community more inclusive. I certainly would encourage you all to speak. Marcy Harris Blumenthal with the Federation here in Greater Washington worked really hard and tirelessly to launch a initiative here on a disability inclusion committee and has hired somebody. And so if you have questions on how to get started, she's going to be loving that her inbox will be full, but you know, like, certainly that would be a suggestion on hear what people who have very similar situations are doing and just keep talking about it.
And can I follow up with that with one quick comment?
Sure.
There. And I would just say part of that is just keeping, as you said, the conversation alive and keeping inside alive. I just started my comments by saying you can all hear me, right? Which is really not so good. So I apologize and it's
no problem. Yeah, the microphone is helpful that way. Also, if anybody's
sure.
wearing a T-coil hearing aid or an FM loop, it certainly is beneficial.
Good morning. Yeah. Is this working?
Yes.
Okay. Is? Yeah.
Ignore me.
Okay. That's better. My name is Jay Spector. I'm with the Jewish Employment Vocational Service in Philadelphia. 30-plus years of working to help individuals with disabilities across all spectrums to gain employment, and we certainly have had an incredible track record of working with employers, and kudos really to the Department of Labor and other federal agencies who really have led the forefront and have been great examples of creating inclusion in the workplace. Sometimes I get more frustrated the fact that it doesn't trickle down far enough. And as much as we've made a lot of progress over the years in the span of my career in this field, in creating inclusion, there's a lot more to do on it. My bigger frustration, and I know this isn't the name of the topic for this session, but is that what I've seen really is a drastic reduction in resources available to help support people to be successful in employment. Not so much on the assistive technology, which has been wonderful, but really on the resources. When you look back, when I started my career, there were things called vocational rehab counselors. There were master's degrees. There was a whole field, and it's gone. It makes it very hard as a player out there trying to find employment opportunities to really get that access. We operate in Philadelphia, one of the America's Job Centers. We have partners from the Voc Rehab Department in the city of Philadelphia to have somebody one day a week to see individuals with disabilities and get them engaged in the funding that's available is not sufficient. So from the standpoint of, I know money can't solve all the problems, but there certainly has really been fewer and fewer resources that we've been seeing. One of my biggest fears and challenges right now is transitioning youth. Individuals who have gone through the public school system, who are aging out, and what we have found is that there is absolutely no real career pathway system for those individuals. We talk about career pathways a lot and moving people from school to work or school to college, but there is real no effort, and we all know what happens to an individual who's spent the last several years in school, and after school there is no place to go. They go home, and if they're not engaged in any kind of orderly transition, they can be sitting at home. That could mean a parent having to give up their job because they can't leave their young adult child at home unsupervised. So there's a lot of challenges, especially in that area, and a lack of sensitivity, as I've seen, in sort of getting to, Jennifer, your policy issues now, is really having to retool and rethink how we're using the school systems as a place to help transition people so that there is an orderly way to flow into the world of work.
Thank you so much for your comments. You brought up a lot of really important issues. One of the great opportunities and challenges right now, and folks, we were talking about this a little bit before, is the new Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act has new requirements and strengthens training for the non-VR partners in the American job centers. They don't know what to do, and they don't know how they're going to do it, and they tell us they don't have money to do it. But they actually get more people with disabilities than the VR programs do, because there are a lot of people with disabilities that don't qualify for the VR definition with limited resources. As you know, they have to serve people with significant disabilities first. So they do have new requirements. Some of them are really just a matter of training and understanding how to communicate with people with disabilities. But they shouldn't be just sending people with disabilities when they show up needing supports to VR. They have to provide those services themselves, and that's the only way that we're going to be able to leverage the dollars, the limited dollars that you have, that VR has, to serve the number of people with disabilities that we're hoping will come to the American Job Centers. We do provide we've been providing a lot of technical assistance guidance. There have been 40 documents that have been published on how to meet the new WIOA requirements. Some of them have to do with disabilities. One of them is a great non-discrimination guide for the American Job Centers that was released in July, so that they understand what they need to do. But I think getting the word out there about the new requirements, getting people to accept responsibility, realize that they are going to be held accountable for it, is going to take a little while. Our office does have 26 Disability Employment Initiative grants around the country in the American Job Centers, and I don't think Pennsylvania has one. The ones we did this year and last year are specifically on using career pathways for young people with disabilities. So I'd love to follow up with you, Jay, and get you some information about what they're doing and how it's working. We do have grants with community colleges to make sure that they know how to serve people with disabilities. There are some estimates now that 20 to 40% of the students in community colleges might be students with disabilities. And we're talking primarily about non-apparent disabilities, learning disabilities. So they better recognize that this is their current population and understand how to help them manage the learning that they're doing in community colleges, because they don't always complete their program because they don't get their needs met. And the community colleges have a disconnect. They're not seeing that the poor matriculation rate of all their students is a problem that they own. It's not that the students are not able to complete because they don't have the wherewithal or they don't have the perseverance, or they might not be getting their disability needs met. So we are learning a lot more about that too, and would love to share some of that with you as well. Thank you though for raising that. It's really, really important.
Do I want to have the microphone? Is that possible?
Excuse me. Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Sorry I was late. Another session, Vivian Bass from DC, CEO at Jewish Foundation for Group Homes. And despite our name, we have so many other programs that that we have initiated. And one of them, in response to the transition youth, that tremendous unmet need of when the school bus stops coming, is a marvelous program that we have now that's in its seventh towards eighth year, called MOST, M-O-S-T, meaningful opportunities for successful transitions that we launched through a grant that was actually facilitated through JFNA's office to make it replicated, which we've done. And we have about 15 in each grouping, but they're not together, everybody. They don't even see one another. And works for a one-year program, generally immediately after the school entitlements conclude. And we've had, you know, marvelous success. Over 80% of the individuals are in programs or else further training programs such as Project Search. Others are in local, you know, colleges, universities, some that for whom that isn't appropriate are in other job training programs. Those of you who were here yesterday for the Cafe Sunflower program, many of the individuals participate in that and go into food service, you know, child care, just a myriad of opportunities, and we'd be glad to help share any of that. It's been really marvelous, and
Sounds nice.
The Innovator of the Year Award in the state of Maryland, so yay. I think that's pretty good, so we'd be glad to share that with you. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that, Vivian. No, it most sounds like a tremendous program.
Cookie?
I know we're running out of time, but I thank you so much. This is great. Jennifer's question is really for you. I volunteer in local government, and as I said, we have 1.2 million people in Fairfax County, a very large, wealthy, affluent, well-regarded jurisdiction around the country, but we are abysmal at hiring people with disabilities, and it's an on and on frustration. And we met with the HR resource person who heads in the county, who was very lovely, and found out, oh, we accommodate people. The most accommodation we have are ergonomic chairs, and that's really not what we're getting at when you talk about employing people appropriately with disabilities. It's not ergonomic chairs. It's not I can't lift more than 5 pounds. It's not those kinds of things. And do you have any suggestions to shake up local government, and I think the federal government sometimes as well? I've heard that frustration too, to how we can make them want to hire people with disabilities in a meaningful way.
So sometimes internships are the low-risk way for people that haven't had experiences hiring people with disabilities to start.
We are lucky that we have an internship program.
Oh, great. And is it inclusive of people with disabilities?
No, I'm talking about the Disability Services Board, and supported by DRS, Department of Rehabilitation.
Okay.
And we've gotten that, and that's been hard fought, and it's been great. But then our interns end up having lots of challenges, and we thought we were very clear what it means that you have those kinds of things. So, yes, we have that, but it's just a problem, and I'm sure you don't have the solution, but it's a source of eternal frustration to those of us who really want to see the landscape change and to bring people with disabilities to the right job, and it enriches everyone.
Right, and so it's hard to drive change without a senior partner who is committed. In Fairfax, we've worked with other people in Fairfax, but it's may have to be driven even at the state level. We are working with the National Governors Association and the State Legislators Organization. I can't remember what it's called. But again, happy to follow up with you, find out what some, you know, kind of connections there at the state level might help you drive that culture change too, and then provide some on the ground resources as well. Thank you.
All right, in the interest of getting everyone through the massive security that opens in a few minutes, I want to thank you both so much, Jennifer and Dana. Thanks for all of the wonderful information, and good luck to you, and thank you for offering to be available to answer any further questions for us. So
thank you.
Good luck to you. Yes, and thank you, Liz, again.
Can we get a quick photo?